All right, let's go around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. And I'm going to reverse some things here, Lopez. I usually try and end around the NFL with your daily update of the top 100 players as voted on by NFL players in the league headed into the 2025 season. Except we're going to start there for, I think, an obvious reason. Another Houston Texan shows up. So we were looking at this, and I think we had gotten to around the 34 and 33 range as we are really working our way back. We're finally getting towards the ends of this. We mentioned Buda Baker of the Cardinals and Josh Jacobs yesterday. Well, number 32 is Houston Texans wide receiver Nico Collins. And number 31 is George Kittle, who's a tight end. He also, George Kittle, had a fall. But Nico Collins, I didn't think I realized this. He wasn't ranked in the top 100 last year. And this year comes in at number 32.
Well, that's big time respect. That's, I mean, and 32, it doesn't seem, it actually seems pretty high to me where I thought he might come in. I mean, keep in mind, you know, there's quarterbacks, there's other receivers, there's the big time running backs that are still out there, defensive ends, rush ends, you know, all the TJ Watts of the world, and you know, all that stuff. 32 is pretty dang good respect.
If you want to put this in like draft talk, that's the 32nd pick, pretty much
in the league of the established players. Yes. Yeah. And when you look at some of the players that have not, the receivers that have not yet been named. You know, I just did a cursory search, and Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, all these guys, Amon Ross St. Brown, you would expect them to be higher, you know, than that. I think that's great respect.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Really, really good respect. As we mentioned, they've been doing little vignettes the NFL has leading up to each release. This is some of the stuff that came off of the video for Nico Collins. And I'll start with Zaire Franklin, obviously the linebacker for the Indianapolis Colts, division rival. This is the praise that he had for Nico Collins.
I think Nico is special, though. Like, Nico Collins is the real deal. Deep threat, and you got to hit him. He's a big boy, so Nico like that. He's faster than you think he is. I didn't really recognize it last year. He's a lot better after the catch than I thought he was, too. Production speaking for itself, even though he missed some time. So definitely a lot of respect for Nico.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what really came to the forefront the last 2 years, but especially last year.
I was a little shocked at the surprise that Zaire Franklin was seeming to give on Nico Collins' ability after the catch. I figured that players in the league, especially someone who sees him twice a year, would have had some level of understanding of not just is he tough to handle with the size that he has, his catchability, his radius, and those types of things, but His ability to move and shake and, you know, be able to beat guys with his legs, you know, the fast, long legs that he has, but then also the amount of wiggle and smoothness that he has. I was kind of impressed, and I think that probably speaks to it as much as we saw some of that, particularly not last year, but the year before. I imagine last year was a level of confirmation for a lot of dudes in the league that, oh, yeah, he's like that.
Yeah, no, I think it is a surprise because of where he plays, but at the same time, players are just like us. When you see Nico Collins, you think big, long, fast. You don't think the guy that can, you know, necessarily, you know, make some moves, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's also still considering he broke 1,000 yards in 12 games. Like, this dude clearly showing the production, as Zaire said. I was very interested because Nico Collins himself shows up in his own video. This is Nico Collins.
Is Nico Collins a top 100 player?
Absolutely, if you ask me, for sure.
Why is that?
I feel like I bring a lot to the table, man. Big frame receiver, stretch the field, explosive player.
He actually said what I was talking about. Like, even he considers himself big, lengthy, fast, but he kind of left out, you know, what he can do, as you mentioned, after the catch.
Yeah, that was him saying that he definitely deserved to be in the top 100 as evidenced by being 32. Like, clearly he's right. He went on to say in that Nico himself, saying that, like, you know, he likes bringing the energy and, you know, being able to bring that to his teammates. And I was thinking about that because I think it might have been DJ Bienemy talking about this, you know, offense not having as many of those types of guys, especially with Stephon Diggs, like clearly being a guy who brought some edge and some energy to that offense. Obviously, Joe Mixon remains as one of those guys whenever he is ready to play. I wonder how much Nico Collins, I mean, we don't view him as that type of guy. He really is just kind of a quiet come in and work guy. But he mentioned it, like bringing that kind of juice. Do you think that maybe we're just missing some of that, or maybe he is has a level of evolution as he feels himself more, and clearly he gets more of that respect, to where maybe he gives more of that to the offense in general.
And different ways to bring that juice. You know, some guys are just hair on fire, screaming, sure, running around, you know, in the middle of the huddle, breaking them up and all that stuff. He might just do it a different way, and I think it's clear that however he does it, it works.
Real quick before we move along, one more from the audio, and it's Will Anderson Jr., and listen to the question that he gets asked here, and the answer that he gives.
Last question. Who's number one?
I'm going to say Nico Collins. I feel like Nico is very underrated, and I feel like he deserves so much more love. Nico is a big threat in his league, and he had a lot of time off from everything, but like, I 100% guarantee you if he didn't, he would be breaking all types of records.
Who's number one was the question. I can't say specifically if that's who's number one in the top 100, who's number one on the team, who's number one on the offense, who's the number one wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I don't know which of those questions it could have been, but the idea that he goes Nico Collins for any of those answers is deeply interesting.
I would guess receiver, and you know, obviously bias involved. Yeah, that's his teammate. You know, he's going to want to say it, and you is being videotaped. But it's still, you don't necessarily think, oh, you're crazy. You know, your immediate reaction is, oh, you're nuts. You know, he doesn't have the accolades or the acclaim that, like, the Justin Jeffersons have, and he would be number one in my book. But you don't immediately discount it. You know? You don't discount it immediately.
No, so yeah. I do love that, man. He's getting his love. He deserves to get this love, and it only makes me more excited for mm-hmm. what he can do in an offense that would be, you know, better suited to his talents, gives him an opportunity to move around and actually get some more advantageous looks. And I think one of the big things for me of that Nick Haley's offense promises, at least over what we know Bobby Slowick's didn't give as nearly as much, is having the scheme create things in addition to the players themselves. That is so very interesting, because if you extrapolate that out with a fully healthy Nico Collins where you mm-hmm. get maybe 16, 17 games and a more productive Nico Collins, that sounds like a cancel Christmas type situation.
Well, what's the running game going to do? Because I think his big plays are going to come off of play action. Given the way that they're setting up the offense, it could be game over. You know, if their running game is just significant enough to give him the opportunity to make those big plays on a play action.
Speaking of game over, as we continue around the NFL, we're continuing to look forward to the start of the 2025 season, which for the Texans runs through SoFi Stadium in LA against the Rams week one. And I am getting even less and less confident that mm-hmm. Matt Stafford will be there with the Texans on the field. Apparently he's going to test his back with another workout tomorrow, and that they're going to try and have him go for this game. But that back injury mm-hmm. went from, oh no, we're just kind of monitoring and dealing, like basically the idea, you know, being that, yeah, oh, they're just kind of just trying to manage it a little bit, to that worked. We'll test and see. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll give it a try. It really feels like this is not going to be a good thing for Matt Stafford this year, particularly for week one.
To me, it feels like Yordan Alvarez hitting off a tee. It really does. Because Matt Stafford, they didn't say he's going to practice this weekend. They said he's going to start working out. He's going to work out this weekend.
Yep.
I asked the question of you guys before the show. Are we at the point where it's clear Stafford just won't be the same guy even if he does play? My answer is yes. I am at the point where he will not be the same guy. I get Matt Stafford, big brain, big arm, you know, veteran, all that stuff. Maybe he could fall out of bed and throw for 300 yards. I don't think that's the case anymore.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that last season. I know he had an okay season last season, mm-hmm. but I felt like it was kind of going downhill mm-hmm. From last season too, man. I just don't see him as the same Matt Stafford that can threaten to get to a Super Bowl mm-hmm. or make some noise in the playoffs.
Are you there?
Oh, 100%. Like mm-hmm. last year it was injuries that keeping him away from the game, but now it seems like, and when you talk about a back specifically, like, I do wonder, that's part of helping you generate your power. Obviously, it comes from your base, but that back is a rotational portion that deals with it. Yeah. And I mean, if he's had back issues to the point where he's not practiced at all in training camp yet, that is with the red jersey. Mm-hmm. That is before we take Knox. Only God knows what it looks like when he's playing. If for no other reason, then what if it's just the psychological portion of it? If they mm-hmm. get to the point where they manage his ability to actually throw the football physically, the psychological part of protecting yourself changes. Now, the name that comes to mind here, you got to take it with a grain of salt, because I don't know how much people like believe in his game just generally. But Kirk Cousins, you could see the difference when he started dealing with injuries and he was just trying to get rid of the football to avoid all level of contact.
Mm-hmm.
The level of game that he previously had and the level of game that he was playing with last year became so abundantly clear that it was lesser than. And I can only imagine what that looks like for Matt Stafford, especially when you look at number 51 and number 55 on those edges coming at you.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What about even just the first hit? Forget sacks. Or being warned. That's just after his first hit.
Hey, it's tough to do anything with your back hurting, man. Like, it don't matter what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just don't see him being the same
person. There. I don't think you're going to get...
I'm not worried about Matt Stafford.
I guess you have to worry a little bit, but I'm not really either.
You're just completely... You're good on it?
I'm good on it.
Wow. Okay, I find that to be very interesting. Some other things that are happening around the NFL. I was reading an interesting story in ESPN about the strategy of organizing an NFL locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, some of the conversations that were had, like talking about the Falcons, Michael Penix Jr., who actually in one of these preseason games had a very unfortunate lower third, or actually it wasn't a preseason game, but I think one of the local news channels
mm-hmm.
tried to put Michael Penix's name up there, made the very obvious misspelling. And so we're in this place, baby. We are already here where we are getting the jokes, the mm-hmm. man anatomy jokes, except Oof. It wasn't even a joke. It was just somebody messing up their job on TV. That's neither here nor there. The story kind of talks about Michael Penix and his positioning where his locker last year was next to Jesse Bates, the third
mm-hmm.
big time safety that they acquired with the Falcons. And even he did not realize that this was probably intentional because they went back and forth all season long, kind of Jesse Bates giving mm-hmm. Michael Penix kind of game on, you know, the things that he's seeing from a defensive perspective, the things that he would do. You know, they pass the iPad around. There's other instances of, you know, like J.J. McCarthy being next to Harrison Smith in Minnesota and Darius Slay having a locker next to then rookie corner Quinyon Mitchell, so on and so forth. And that got me thinking
mm-hmm.
for your Houston Texans, like, who are the guys that you're hoping are sitting together?
Yeah.
Or in that locker room, maybe giving game to one.
And first of all, you know this, but maybe some people don't. It's all planned.
100%.
Every last seat in that locker room. And I'm talking like head coach and general manager get in on it. Like, where do you think so-and-so should be in the locker room? Now, a lot of times, which is interesting in the case, in the example that you gave, a lot of times offense and defense are separated.
Well, sometimes.
But not always.
Like, I think was Kyle Shanahan mm-hmm. of the Niners. He makes it intentional that guys are not sitting next to dudes in their same position group.
Right, right.
Like, and I do wonder, because, again, I don't have a full accounting of this, and I really wish that we'd had an opportunity to talk to B. Scott about this, who is frequently in that locker room, to get a feel for what he has seen from D'Amico Ryans' tendencies here on the locker room kind mm-hmm. of situation. And if he follows in line with someone who I know he probably has a good respect for in Kyle Shanahan, where he's having guys who are entirely outside of their particular position groups and maybe offense next to defense, not necessarily boy-girl, like it's an elementary school, mm-hmm. but, you know, kind of getting guys in different perspectives where they might get some different game. But especially for the rookies, like a Jaden Higgins, right? So
that's
so
the one I was thinking of. Jaden Higgins with Nico Collins and Jalen Noel with Christian Kirk.
I think Jalen Noel might actually be next to Braxton Berrios the way that they've communicated. But even if it's not like
Christian Kirk, though, man. Whew. He's we heard some, I think it was Jalen Noel talking, I don't know who it was, but talking about just his professionalism, it was Jalen Noel, you know, the like his attention to detail, et cetera. Christian Kirk can give him so much. Yeah.
You know what the answer is for me when it comes to Ariante Ursary?
Who?
It's not anybody on the offensive line. I think that like Danielle Hunter, like have him next to D Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And cause it seems like Ariante has already gotten a decent amount of like, you know, experience and a decent amount of game from playing opposite Danielle Hunter. And he even talked about it in one of those earlier weeks of training camp, the idea of and what we were talking about of, you know, the best players have that same level of standard mm-hmm. even when they're tired. That was a Danielle Hunter joint. That was something that he got. So, like, I can only imagine the things that he continues to get all season long being next to Danielle, who I imagine is not a huge talker, but if you're locker room, you know, locker neighbors, so to say, I imagine you get probably more opportunities for that as well.
Yeah, probably in the locker room he's more so. Yeah. Yeah.
Or even just a little small talk on, hey, I like that technique you did, next time move mm-hmm. your feet back, or just that kind, because they're going against each other in practice, so that could be some extra time.
Who do you sit Blake Fisher next to?
Ooh, that is a good question. Mm-hmm. That is a really good question because I still don't know if it's anybody in.
You want to sit him next to somebody nasty.
Okay, like to try and engender some of that physicality.
Yeah.
Could that be a CJ Gardner-Johnson situation?
Ooh, that'd be a good one. Oh, the conversations would be awesome to listen into.
I'm like, could that be a CJ Gardner-Johnson? Because I also think that the out-of-the-box pairings, of course, I think, again, if you see it on ESPN, it was a story about...
Or Al-Shaair.
That would, Aziz would be the great answer. That's a great answer.
Yeah.
Now, are y'all trying to sit them next to a defensive player or just anybody?
No, just to learn. My big complaint with Blake Fisher has always been, I don't know how nasty he is. I don't know how much, you know,
The first person I thought about was Tytus Howard, because Tytus Howard is somebody who came in as a project and worked his way into probably one of the better offensive linemen on his team.
Yeah.
So I felt like he could probably learn a little bit how to get to that point.
Sure. But of course, one of the things that I thought was interesting was just the ways in which, you know, some of the coaches go with a guy that's not in that same position group, not on this, and sometimes not even the same side of the football. And there's just different perspectives. I always think of it like, I kind of view college in some ways as we've gotten to a place where we've made it into job training, where I view more college as an opportunity, a different way of thinking. And sometimes I like it when somebody goes to college for something, gets a level of different way of thinking and brings it to a different area.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that it helps them think differently. So I honestly view it kind of similarly, where you have a defensive player talking to an offensive player and having a different perspective than the coaching that they get in meeting rooms and, you know, being around their group, either in the meeting room or on the field. It's just a different perspective being there in the locker room, where hopefully you get something, some other level of help in allowing you to push forward to being the best version of yourself. So I think that that would be really cool. That's going to be another one. I might have to get down there after the game and see what's happening post game, or at the very least check in with the many people that we know end up in the locker room and get a feel for, hey, what is the landscape?
And we don't even know if they separate or not, you know, offense and defense and all that.
No. And so I kind of want to get a feel for what the Texans are doing maybe with that locker room. And we know that the locker room is tight knit, right? We know that those guys really vibe together. So I'd be interested to see maybe what some of those pairings are. Somebody said Blake can sit by the trash can for all I care. All right.
I got one on I got one on my phone that said, sit Christian Harris next to Lance McCullers Jr.
832, Christian Harris in the medical room. Okay, very good. Blake sitting next to Trent Brown would be,
that'd be good.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
I like that. Somebody said tackles next to the ends. I love that as a general idea as well. And then of course interior guards next to the tackles, right? The defensive tackles be cool as well. But yeah, I might see about, you know, I might give that as an assignment to B. Scott or whatever, or maybe Bajani, somebody that heads down there to the locker room, or I might even take
that. Should be a question to one of the players, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not a bad one. I might see about that tomorrow, because we got football, baby, noon at NRG Stadium between your Houston Texans and the Carolina Panthers. All right, coming up next, I do want to circle back again to another ESPN thing, but this one actually regards position groups. They did rankings across the NFL of various different position groups. How do the Texans stack up, and what are the position groups that you're looking to still see improvement from over the remainder of training camp? 713-572-4610. We'll do it next. All right, let's get into some more of the Texans in a different way. ESPN put out an interesting piece this morning, I think, is when it came out, to be honest. And they went around looking at the NFL's positional group rankings, the best, the worst of these team units. And I thought this could be an interesting way to come back around to the Texans and talk about where they are as a roster and get a feel for how we're feeling about the confidence level that we have in the way that this team is built. Because, I mean, you are less than two weeks away even. August 27th is when the 53-man cut down day is. And you're needing to figure out where you are in it, how you're navigating all these things. So with that being the case, you want to just run through these quickly?
I would love to.
Because I've taken a look at them, and there's a general trend that seems to have popped up, and I want to see how quickly it takes you to notice the trend that I saw. I'll focus on the Texans here, and maybe we can circle around and talk about some of the other teams and where they rank in some of these things. So on quarterback, quarterback, when you talk about the positional rankings, it feels like you're going to lean heavily on the starter, right? Like, that's going to matter a whole bunch. Texans ranked 16th out of 32 teams when they talk about quarterback positional rankings. The best one, Baltimore Ravens, interestingly enough. The shakiest New Orleans Saints. Are we surprised there?
No, no, we're not.
And apparently the unit to watch is the Minnesota Vikings, which makes sense with J.J. McCarthy taking taking the baton over from Sam Darnold. Okay, makes sense. Running back, we're starting to get interesting, aren't we? Right, running back core, we're still interested in what that is. Apparently, and of course, I imagine this is made assuming health and those things, the Houston Texans running back room is ranked 13th of 32.
Okay.
With the best one being the Detroit Lions, the absolute worst one being the Dallas Cowboys, and the unit to watch being the Los Angeles Chargers. But the Texans, 13th. And I mean, I imagine that a lot of this is probably name value, right? Sure. Mixon obviously giving you a lot of actual tangible production value, but then Nick Chubb, name value, and what production can come from him, I imagine carries a lot of the weight there. Wide receiver. I was super interested to get this one. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, let me allow you to guess here. Because I think this one gets interesting on Nico is clearly 32nd best player
right.
in the league according to his colleagues and his peers. Christian Kirk is a valuable veteran, but then you've got a lot of question marks to some
right.
degree.
The question marks is what's going to keep him down. I'm going to say right around where the quarterback room is, 15 or 16.
You're starting to get the trend, 15
yeah.
for the Texans there.
Yeah.
For tight end, Houston Texans.
Oof.
Wow.
Oof.
That sound makes me think that you're thinking low. 17th for the Texans.
Really?
17th. You're, okay. Are you sensing the trend that I'm seeing here?
Okay.
Interior defensive yeah. line ends up being regarded pretty low, in fact, at 28, which I found that to be surprising. Edge rusher. Now, we're not going to fall in that same trend. Edge rushing is fourth.
That's about right.
The Steelers, the Giants, and the Vikings ahead. Vikings ahead of them feels kind of wild because they're doing a lot of generation.
Yeah, but look what they did last year.
They did a great job last year, but I was like, okay.
No, that seems about right.
Off-ball linebacker. Off-ball linebacker comes in at 21.
Okay.
Which I think we probably feel makes sense. Mm-hmm. Cornerback, second, only to the Baltimore Ravens, who just added into their cornerback room. And then safety, interestingly enough, safety sits at, and of course I lost it, fourth. A lot of love for Kalen Bullock. And then
safety,
obviously you added
fourth.
C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Now, of course, I imagine this is without injuries.
Yeah.
But you're seeing where a lot of these different places seemingly rank, and a lot of them are in the middle thereabouts. Which of those kind of jumped off the page most to you? Quarterback, really. Okay, why is that?
Quarterback should be probably top 10. To be honest, Davis Mills, one of the best, most proven, started in the game, backup quarterbacks. They're clearly just ranking. They almost, it feels also, not only are they kind of bunched in the middle in a lot of these groups, but they're also putting too much value on just the starting position.
But I think you have to add more value to the starting position because that's going to be a majority
but not
of what you
all
get
of it.
Not all of it. Not all of it, for sure.
Not all of it. And I think especially at the quarterback position, where, yes, the starter, you have to put a lot of value on how far this quarterback can take your team. But if your starting quarterback goes out, some teams it's like game over. For the Texans, I feel pretty good. Like if you have to go three or four games without C.J. Stroud, you're going to have a chance, depending on the schedule, in three or four games.
But I feel like we feel that way from this camp, though. Mm-hmm. Because was that the case from
last
camp?
You know what?
That's true. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, because I don't know if we were singing the same tune about Davis Mills last
camp. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. But maybe it's a little recency bias, as Figgy's talking about.
From training camp. And we're doing the training camp narrative for Davis Mills.
Davis Mills looked good,
man. If we were going off this list from starting with training camp, then I would – I would kind of side with Lopez a little bit where, I felt like the quarterback room was strong. Mm-hmm. I don't know about last season, though.
Yeah.
Now, the one that jumped out to me was obviously how highly ranked the Houston Texans are at cornerback, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those guys, there's a number of metrics that you can throw out there, passer rating versus, and, obviously you could just talk about interceptions flat out. When you talk about Derek Stingley Jr., Kamari Lassiter, clearly they've gotten accolades last year. I imagine they're set up for even more accolades as Lassiter even gets more love, more attention, and more opportunity. But interestingly enough, one of the things we came into camp with was talking about the depth at cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to revisit that because how would we feel about that? Coming off of the joint practice, the Panthers offense was able to do some things and pass the ball around. Now, of course, the safeties played in here, but the cornerbacks were not without their faults, especially when we talk about depth. I've already gotten to a place where I'm looking at like Jalen Smith, J-Rock as they call him, as possibly the next man up at corner, and he's been solid, but we have not seen him be proven. I mean, you talk about Tremont Smith and then obviously who's my other Smith there?
Your other Smith.
There's Damon Arnett. There's one more cornerback that I miss. Oh, no, it's Tremont Smith and then Damon Arnett and Jalen Smith are kind of some of the cornerbacks in addition to, like, D'Angelo Ross. How are we feeling about that? Because that does matter. We saw cornerbacks have to be drawn into action, and we weren't happy with it last year.
No, the Panthers, you know, kind of had their way against the second group. You know, I know Seth was talking about it yesterday. A little bit of concern of depth at the cornerback position and something that really, frankly, needs to be proved tomorrow. If you can, you know, how you feel about them. The other thing that is interesting to me is, and maybe this is just my mind working funny, like, what if you had to do this list today with where the Texans are?
No, like, with straight up injuries and,
like,
what you're considering.
Running back?
Which of them drops off the biggest? Is it running back or is it safety?
Back. Running back and safety in that order. Like Nick Chubb, you know, who knows, but he seems to be okay, but you don't know anything about what's behind him.
Yeah, and if Mixon isn't there, I think the big thing that shifts is the opportunity for explosives, I think, drops a good amount. Mm-hmm. And that really does make the emphasis that we seemingly are seeing on running the football and having that be foundational, it changes it. We were talking, as you mentioned Seth, we talked to him noon yesterday coming off of the joint practice. And one of the things he talked about is it's hard to tell sometimes if this is going to be 4 yards in a cloud of dust or sometimes 2 yards in a cloud of dust. And those are very different things, right? Those 2 yards are a gap that is as large as the Grand Canyon at times because, you know, the idea of, hey, we pick up 4 or 5 every time we run the football with the opportunity of breaking for bigger.
And play calling.
That forces a defense to do some things where you're only picking up 2. That then puts you on your heels.
Yeah.
That allows defenses to sit back a little bit, commit their resources differently. Mm-hmm. And so I think that Joe Mixon ends up being such a linchpin, and you're highlighting why that ends up being an issue. And that's probably why these preseason games matter a little bit more also in the run game, obviously on the offensive line, but also do we have guys that are going to be able to pop runs, especially in instances where maybe you don't have as great a blocking as you want?
No, the running back position to me is absolutely a different animal altogether. Safety would be second, but beyond that, I'm very interested, and this just ties into just sort of what you're looking forward. Go ahead.
Can I hit this with safeties though? Yeah. Because we did get a text on the text line 713-572-4610 that said, "Is it too late to hope for a trade for safety?" I don't think it's too late to hope for it. It does feel like they've established what their game plan is going to be.
They're waiting. I want to see what CJ Gardner-Johnson. I think they know when he's probably going to be back.
Right.
Do it seem like they waiting or they kind of trust the, what's behind them too?
I think it's a tandem of both. Yeah. I think they feel like,
because they've been kind of known for, like, trusting
make do
the players they have.
Yeah. Make do.
We got spaghetti at home is basically what Nick Caseri was telling the rest of the group here. No, I mean, the news that there was not actually a tear in the ACL for CJ Gardner-Johnson was a boon to this, and I imagine that the idea that he could possibly still play in week one or in the earlier weeks of the season helps this. But then you look over and you go, they everything they've said, and of course it's talk, it's coach speak to some degree, and you're not going to bash your guys, has pointed to the idea they believe in MJ Stewart, and then they believe in Miles Bryan, they believe in these guys that they have in the building to maintain the standard. The question I have is just, how capable of that are they, and what does that then do to the defense? Because it did feel like C.J. Gardner-Johnson already was finding such a huge role within what they were doing.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to try to make do at safety. They have in the past. But again, they tried to upgrade. You know, they did upgrade. And so there is a level of concern there. I'm interested in the interior defensive line. I think that's something I'm going to – and this just speaks to one of the things you're going to kind of keep an eye on tomorrow, especially, you know, with the quote-unquote ones and twos and all that, is what they do on the interior defensive line. Obviously, we've talked about Toji a lot. He seems to be angling his way in there. I think he's
firmly in what he is.
I think
he
might be.
He's a guy who's just – I think this is also, when you go back to D'Amico calling him the most consistent guy on the team, I think that speaks volumes. He's not going to have super high-level play, but he's giving you what he gives you. That's great for a depth guy, and I think that's exactly what he does. But we saw the difference when Toji Ai had to be your starting interior or your starting nose tackle. I think that the reason why this interior defensive line specifically is rated, I think underrated, to be honest, by this ESPN situation is I think they look at Folu Fatu Kasi, who has a number of injuries. In fact, physically unable to perform to start this one.
I'm going to keep an eye on this.
Sheldon Rankins, mm-hmm. who we heard, I mean, we know, he did not play well with the Bengals last year, and it was one of the big questions I had coming in. I was like, is this going to look right?
Yeah.
I think that, one, the culture here is one that fits well for him, but then also what he told us, what he divulged about him dealing with a significant illness for the season, changing the way that he played. I think the hope is that you get a return to what he was prior to that season, because before, even just last season, he was mm-hmm. still very, very good. And then you add Tim Settle, Mario Edwards, the way that they were able to push the pocket and knife up field. And that's got to be better than bottom third interior defensive line, even if it's not going to be, you know, Aaron Donald like, or, Jalen Carter like, or Dexter Lawrence like mm-hmm. in the middle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. There's still an opportunity to get a little bit better feel on all of these as we get a game tomorrow. But coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including an update on Andre, the people who tried to take from Andre Johnson. And we'll get that and get ready for a weekend of Astros baseball next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. If you're a Hoop fan, man, we're getting this is the dead part of the season for NBA, because we're just waiting till October, really. Mm-hmm. But you got a little bit of a taste, and we'll talk more about this later. But we got the schedule. We got a full release of the schedule. 80 of 82 games for your Houston Rockets, and there is a number of them that are nationally televised. 28 to be exact, which is tied for fifth, I believe. There's only four teams ahead of you that all have 34 nationally televised games, which again speaks to just how big of a deal the Rockets are going to be this season. And you're going to have a lot of opportunities to see, big time games where everybody is watching the Houston Rockets and seeing what they're up to.
Rockets of Thunder gets it going, right?
Yep, that gets it going. And then your second game of the season is, I think, 3 days of memory serves mm-hmm. after, where the Detroit Pistons come to Toyota Center. So that is the Thompson Bowl. Comes in to face off against his brother Amen. That'll be
workable early schedule.
Oh yeah, but it's going to be really fun. Like mm-hmm. you're going to get some very early litmus tests mm-hmm. as to what this team looks like at the very least, if not how they compare. Because the Detroit Pistons, I know that we've gotten used to looking at the Pistons and going, oh yeah, that's a useless team. They've worked their way into being now mm-hmm. probably one of the better teams in the East.
Mm-hmm.
They're up and comers. Maybe you could even view them somewhat as a mirror in the East from like a year or two ago of like what the Rockets have been. And so, yeah, that's an interesting team. That'll be fun. There's a number of other notable games that I think we'll get into, I think 12:40. But the Rockets, there's little taste to tell you this is going to be a fun fall basketball-wise to pair with the fun fall that I imagine that the Texans are going to get started off with. In early September.
And just the NBA in general is what popped with me on this. Lots and lots of nationally televised games, lots of network games. 247 nationally televised games versus 172 last year. It's going to be more available. A lot of marquee games. Rockets in particular, like as you mentioned, we'll get into it a little bit more later, but just very workable early. Outside of the Thunder game, and then you should be obviously Kevin Durant, so you'll be able to get a good glimpse of him early on.
Yeah, and a great note by the 8-3-2, 14 back-to-back games, which is three less mm-hmm. than last season, which you imagine hopefully helps your center situation. Because remember, you discovered in, what was that, February, the double big lineup mm-hmm. with Steven Adams, and that helped propel you to it being a better version of yourself as a team. But the problem with Steven Adams is that, that knee injury that he had mm-hmm. and the ways in which they tried to manage it. And it seems like they will continue to do that. It's a lot easier when you're not playing back to back.
And it might help Durant as well.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The older guys, you want to make sure that's the case from the 8-3-2. Nobody wants to see the Lakers. Well,
I don't know about that.
Sorry to tell you, you're going to have a lot of national opportunities too. I'm not saying you have to see them. Nobody's going to force you to sit in front of that TV. I'm just saying there's going to be a lot of opportunities.
Lakers, Knicks, all the usual suspects are on the most.
They are. They are. But. We know what the game is.
Yeah. I wonder how y'all probably don't know, but I wonder how many games Boston got.
Boston has 24 nationally televised games.
Okay,
Try me. I'm a sicko.
Yeah, I was just double checking, man.
No, I was surprised at that because obviously they would have had more. Probably they would have been up there with having 10 more mm-hmm. themselves.
Yeah, but they got a lot of injuries, and it's going to be a weird year for them.
Yeah,
that's a great point. Tari Eason also wasn't playing back to back games, and he becomes even more prominent. this year. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. We'll talk, like I said, we'll talk more about it at 12:40. I do want to talk a little bit more about Kevin Durant in a different way, though, because he done linked up. He's really establishing himself in Houston, ain't he? Because he linked up with Trillburger. They are doing something special. So from today through August 22nd, which is next Friday, so you got a whole week, both of Trillburger's locations will sell the Easy Money Burger, which, according to a news release, is made with Kevin Durant's favorite toppings. How does this burger sound to y'all? Obviously, it's the meat, you know, the patties, the buns, mayonnaise, ketchup, pickles, American cheese.
Sign me up. Yeah, that's a classic.
That basic ass burger.
That's a classic.
What a basic, yeah. Like, I do love that we're doing this. And, you know,
no mustard, though.
Mayonnaise, ketchup, pickles, American cheese.
Gotta throw some mustard on there. Gotta throw. But
that's a lot of content.
Now, to be fair, I'm not really gonna joke on the burger because it's also all for a good cause. It's a fundraiser for flood relief in Central Texas. So obviously, all of these things, good cause, continuing to you know, ingratiate KD, but then also, you know, Trillburger and obviously Bun B in the community as they always are. I just looked at that burger and I was like, so just a burger then? Or like, you, I mean, usually when you get the special name burger on it, you well, get a little something, you add some flavor to it, don't you?
Yeah. But I do think the box of the burger looked cool.
Mm-hmm. It does. It's nice. Yeah,
it's the old, I think it's the image from him playing at UT.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was like a little legendary image of him kind of.
Yeah.
Chilling. Yeah, I like the box, though.
Somebody said that's on the kids menu. All right. Be nice.
That's a basic backyard barbecue. Hey, Reggie's making hamburgers for the entire station at his apartment. It's probably going to be a burger like that.
But do that tell you, I guess, do that make you kind of judge the way KD eats, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I'm not going to say this for certain because I don't know that man, but it does make me wonder. Do he be eating real basic? Is he a chicken tender?
Yeah,
is he a chicken tender guy? Adult? You know what I mean? I'm glad that we said that in unison. Because we all know the chicken tender adult. Like, really?
Yeah.
Chicken tender is what you're getting?
Yeah, because they probably came to him like, hey,
what do you want?
What's your favorite burger? Yeah. Like, if I came to you, Lopez, and said, if I had to create a burger that was your burger, what would you have? You're going to go
the old,
you
the OG go
all
burger.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd have some grilled onions. You know, something like that. That's what's always on mine. Maybe a little, obviously some OG sauce. You know, I love that on my burger. And of course, pickles. I'm a big pickles guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So
grilled onions are big, man.
Yeah, that's a
unique. And cheddar, not American.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I sharper. Agree with you there.
Cheddar sharp, super sharp.
Yeah, I like cheddar. Yeah.
No, that's a good call.
That's a unique burger right there.
Yeah.
It's just the backyard.
That's my go-to.
Burger.
Yeah.
But it would track. It would track if KD is like a chicken tender cat because...
Y'all both said it at the same time.
And I don't say this... Well, I say this with as much respect as I can muster. There's a little bit of disrespect in there I've got to acknowledge. But it would make sense because KD operates his life as if the only thing he cares about is hooping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just... Yeah. He don't care about nothing else really but just being a great hooper. Mm-hmm. And that's great for our purposes because he's really good. Well, that and just, you know, dealing with trolls on Twitter, which...
That's his hobby.
He is doing it. He hasn't stopped doing, and he has continued doing. As if you follow him on Twitter, just this week he was going back and forth with some dude that, admittedly, the dude was basically trying to like wave away his claim as like one of the greatest, if not the greatest, scorers of all time in the NBA, which he is. Like I would argue that he absolutely is the greatest scorer in the history of the NBA.
I don't know about that, but he's one of them.
I knew that you would balk at that, but I believe
he's one of them.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. All right, some other things that are popping. We got some confirmation from a number of outlets of what Lil Kiki said. Not that we didn't believe Lil Kiki. Andre Johnson's home was indeed ransacked, and there were several items stolen, and we got a little bit of insight. The very sentimental, valuable thing, if not, I mean, obviously there's some other things, but one of them, his Hall of Fame ring.
Come on, man. That was tough. A lot of jewelry, clearly professionally done. A window was broken. The bedroom door was the only door open, so they, you know, they went in there, or not the bedroom door, the room where the stuff was. They went in there knowing what they needed, what they wanted, and got it, and all this. That's one of those things. Now, you can certainly get another, I think you can get another Hall of Fame ring, but how are they not going to be caught?
Well, I don't know. Like,
what do you do with that?
Is there actually a black market to move these things?
That's what I'm saying. Like, what do you do
the
with
type
that?
Of things that I imagine happen in movies, but I don't know for real.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea, man. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't know what to do with a Hall of Fame ring that said Andre Johnson on it.
Yeah.
Like, what do I do with it?
And even some jewelry, which you can always trace the jewelry at some of these, you know, fences, some of these places that sell them and resell them, you know? Yeah.
And then, we were talking about it the first time this came up. The dude that got the pawn shop owner that got popped in the Joe Burrow case. He ends up, you know, pleading guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now all these folks, I imagine they probably already have been, but especially now they're on high alert that, hey, man, you don't want to be doing business with these stolen goods.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's going to be hard for you to just get out here and pawn that as well. There's got to be a lot of places that are like, nah, I'm not taking that.
I ain't touching that. Burn my hands.
Yeah, unless he Andre Johnson fan and just want to put it in this man cave or something.
Or like buy it and give it back to Andre. Like, all right, Andre, I was able to get your stuff. Here you go.
I forgot people used to do that too, man. The chain snatchers and then pay to get your chain back.
Yeah.
They was doing that with a lot of rappers.
Mm-hmm.
Nasty business. Look,
they'll get caught.
They will.
And it's been a minute.
They've waited. Yeah. They've waited a little longer.
The story been around for
at least a week,
more than a
maybe
week.
More.
Yeah.
Somebody said they'll melt all the jewelry down and get the gold. It's like $3,000 an ounce right now.
It's not just gold though.
There's some diamonds on that junk.
Yeah.
Nah, that would be real sad though if his Hall of Fame ring just gets melted down for parts. Like there's a level of value that's in you there could, besides.
Yeah, you could have left that. Man. I'm sure he has some other jewelry.
Yeah. Oh well, they took that
they
too.
They took a lot.
Yeah I would have at least left the Hall of Fame.
Man, they took that too. Some other things that are popping. Baseball's going, baby. Baseball. We got a 3-game set versus the Orioles at Daikin Park to finish out this 6-game homestand before they go on the road again, and they will see Baltimore in that swing as well. Mm-hmm. But it's Fromber on the mound today. Versus a, what would you say his ERA was?
Zero and six. He's 0-6 with a 6.7 ERA.
I'm not going to ask you to say it again, but then we continue the summer of George with Jason Alexander out there on the mound on Saturday, and then we'll get the redemption, or the second time around, rather, because I don't want to say that Christian Javier's first start was anything that needed to be redeemed, but Christian Javier out there on Sunday. How do you like the three guys that you're sending out there?
Oh, this is about, as much as you can hope for right now. We talked earlier about how important it is to get some of these other pitchers back, but Fromber getting it going with an absolute lock of a win tonight, and then
you just keep laying it on really thick.
Oh, it's a total lock.
I can't wait. I'm going to personally acquire those smelling salts for you to have if you have to pay your penance.
What are you
going to
do if they
Jason?
Win? You're saying they're not.
I will give you praise, which apparently is probably better than anything else I could do for you in this instance. Is it not?
Oh, it's a lock. It's easy. It's not even that hard to figure out.
Yeah, I mean,
they played for 5.5 hours yesterday, got on a plane, came to Houston. They're the Orioles, who are not good. They're facing Fromber Valdez with a tomato can pitching.
See, that's the part that worried me a little bit. A bad team coming in, and you mentioned the 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
And just being the Orioles.
Yeah.
Any given day on baseball, man, it's 162 of these things. They can go all sorts of ways. However, don't get out in here and embarrass us, Astros. Like, just go ahead and handle business. You're not facing a pitcher this weekend with an ERA under 4. Like, go ahead and handle up and get some wins. Two if you're being nice. 3 if you really want to do something for us and widen that gap versus the Mariners. That's all I can ask for. Also, you mentioned Lance McCullers Jr. He is on the mound, obviously not for the Astros. He's going for the Sugarland Space Cowboys this weekend. So that'll another opportunity to see if he's overcome the blister, and maybe more importantly, if he can have good control over his stuff and really execute an outing, because that'll be huge. We talk about, you know, the pen when the starting rotation. Another guy, if Lance is back and, you know, delivering and operating the way that he wants to, gives a spot of more flexibility when
he said
comes
if
to
Lance
pitchers.
Is back.
What? What? So I can't even talk about the hypotheticals? What do you want me to do here? How am I supposed to talk about this if I can't even do that?
I'm focusing on Luis Garcia and JP France right now. We'll see. We'll see. You're not wrong, but we'll see.
Damn. I didn't even say definitively that he would be. I didn't say that he'd be back doing really good pitching. I was just, if.
Yeah.
Damn. Can't say nothing around here. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us on this Friday. Big game. Tomorrow, well, I mean, any game's a big game, but it is a big game, especially as we're trying to do further evaluation on what this offensive line is as we continue through training camp. And if you really think about it, there's only a few more chances to get some real good data points on this offensive line. What are you hoping to see? What do you need to see so that you're comfortable going into L.A. The first week of the season? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about the offensive line next.